You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, the Congressional Budget Office has calculated the costs and impacts of the new House Republican health care bill. We look at what they say the proposed defunding of Planned Parenthood would mean.
First, March is Women's History Month, a month dedicated to observing the contributions of women in the United States and beyond. Now we look back at early women of Wisconsin and how their lives have impacted the state we know today.
Genevieve McBride joins us now. She's a professor emerita of history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and she's the editor of the book Women's Wisconsin, From Native Matriarchies to the New Millennium. Genevieve, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, what do you hope as a scholar of history, what do you hope gets accomplished during Women's History Month?
Lots of learning, as always. It's nice to take a little time to recognize more than half of the women today, as well as more than half of our population today, as well as more than half of the people in our past. I hope actually that people do that every month of the year, but some teachers need to be told to remember the ladies, as Abigail Adams said to John in writing our Constitution. So if we get a few weeks this month around spring break weeks or whatever, that's great.
Now, you are a specialist in Wisconsin history, among other things. What parts of women's history in Wisconsin do you think in particular deserve more attention?
Oh, the early women were absolutely marvelous. Are, of course, Native American women. This anthology starts out with the story of the woman chief of the Ho-Chunk, Hopakoakau, whose name meant the glory of the morning of Wisconsin. What a way to start a story. She was fascinating, and her descendants are still with us today. She married a French fur trader, Sablevad Escarres. So when you see the name Decorah, Iowa, or the Decorah clan still today in the Ho-Chunk, those are the descendants of the woman chief of the Ho-Chunk. And isn't it interesting? We're in a state where we still refuse to elect a woman chief today. We've had women run for governor, but we still haven't gotten back to where we were 400 years ago. So I think there are lessons to be learned from the past. And then the stories of my ancestors, because my name is actually Genevieve Gardiner McBride. I'm named for my French-Canadian grandmother, the French who came here and created the incredible Métis culture, which reigned here for 150 years until the American culture took over and replaced it, unfortunately. But until almost 1850, our society, the highest of society, were the French-Canadian and Native American Métis, the children of both cultures, a culture of incredible mutual respect, intermarriage with no question. In other words, the Native Americans welcomed the first immigrants here, the French-Canadians, from the 1600s forward. And I think we could learn a lot from that past, too. We lived together in wonderful ways in the past. And it's really only for about the last 150 years that we've abandoned that with, for example, the implementation of President Andrew Jackson's horrific Indian Removal Act, which affected this state as well as others much more, but even in this state, the tendency to import the worst of other cultures, unfortunately, took over after 1850. But even then, we have many wonderful stories, lessons from the past to be learned about how the disenfranchised in society, women and others, work together to gain their rights and gain their citizenship, almost full citizenship today, although we still don't have equal rights under the Constitution. That story's in there, too. You mentioned this anthology. It starts with the story 400 years ago, but it's not just the story of the early women. I wrote the last part, as historians haven't written it yet, to take it right up into this new millennium, which we hope will be a better one than the last one for Wisconsin.
I want to look at some of those early days that you began with, and looking through this anthology, there are quite a number of examples of women who were doing roles that were not roles that you would think typically would be filled by women in those days. And in particular, You highlight women who were active as fur traders, especially in northern Wisconsin, on Madeline Island, around Mackinac Island. Can you tell us about some of those women?
Oh, yes. One of the first excerpts, the anthology, is to explain it to readers in hope that they might enjoy it. I don't get any royalties. They all go to the State Historical Society because it's from its articles in its magazine and in books that I drew. 45 articles that I excerpted down to nice little short readable pieces, but indicating where you can go online to read the entire article that scholars wrote in each case, but 45 of those, about hundreds of women. And the first one excerpted is the wonderful story of Therese Schindler of Mackinac, who was one of actually a family of women fur traders, people who've been to Mackinac Island and have seen the gorgeous grand old hotel there that belonged to her sister, Madeline Laframboise. And she actually also, with her husband, was a fur trader in Milwaukee, too. They were incredibly mobile people. The trade took them up and down and around the Great Lakes and the rivers of Wisconsin. And they the good reenactments of the fur trade that can be found today, you will now see recognition that there were women fur traders, and they were very good at it. That was, again, part of the Native American and Métis culture, that the women were very involved in the economics of their societies then. So it really wasn't considered unusual then that women would be in business.
And skipping around, but in the same category of stuff you didn't know women did in Wisconsin history, lighthouse keepers was another.
Oh, I happen to live just a couple of blocks from the wonderful North Point Lighthouse, which is I got to be part of with the State Historical Society, helping to reopening it for tours on our lakefront, my beautiful Lake Michigan in Milwaukee. And the longest-lasting federal government lighthouse keeper in our history was the marvelous Georgiana Stebbins, who ran that lighthouse, guided thousands of people safely into our harbor in Milwaukee, actually helped to modernize it, electrify the lighthouse, but for decades before that, she had to climb up every night and light it, as well as take the boat out sometimes to help people come in. And it's just, it's a wonderful story, and it's told beautifully at the North Point Lighthouse. I encourage people to come down to my wonderful historic neighborhood along the lakefront in Milwaukee and tour the lighthouse and see where she worked, and others too.
We're talking with Genevieve McBride right now. She is Professor Emerita of History at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and she's the editor of several books, including Women's Wisconsin from Native Matriarchies to the New Millennium. And Genevieve, let's talk about Milwaukee and the role that women played in its founding and in getting it up and running as a city. What do we know there?
Well, I like to say that in all the talk about city fathers, I'd like to remind people that cities and states and countries had their mothers, too. I could like to consider the founder of Milwaukee, the lovely Josette Vaugeneau, or as we say today, Juno. The Junos, all the attention goes to Laurent Solomon Juno in other books because, of course, it has to be a man who founded cities and made history. But actually, it was her family, the Vaux, her father before her, Jacques Vaux, and her Native American mother, Josette, was part Native American. They founded the fur trading post that then when this newcomer, Canadian, who still wasn't a citizen, so he couldn't have founded the city, if you ask me, couldn't own the land, but he married. He worked for Jacques Vaux and Solomon Juno, married Josette Vaux, and that's how he gets the credit for founding the city. Men do that, but when women write the history books, we can take a different look at it and say, she was here first. She was an adult by then, but she had been born and raised here while he was still up in Quebec, Canada, and she grew up here and at the family's other trading post in Green Bay, and she also saved the city while he was out gallivanting around, as fur traders had to do. She ran the fur trading post. He could only speak French for many years. She was fluent in many languages, French, English, native dialects, and the like, And she's credited with saving the city from an attack at one point. She also, very literally, was the mother of Milwaukee because she was our first midwife and helped its population boom.
And Genevieve, times are different now in terms of crediting the founder of the city. Is she getting more recognition now?
I hope so, through my work in this book, also a book on Milwaukee history that I contributed to, also the courses I've created and taught for many years, not just on women's history, but I created a whole sequence of courses on Midwestern history, where we certainly look at Wisconsin history within it. I'm not sure if any of those courses are going to continue now, since I just retired and we're losing about a third of the faculty of our history department over the years at UW-Milwaukee. So we'll be happy to be, my successors will have to be very careful in offering the courses that students need, and there will be fewer electives like Midwestern history. But I know in the years that I taught those courses and taught these stories, women and men loved them, loved hearing more about local history. I think local history matters, not just women's history, because the lesson is that history was not just made by a bunch of guys with ponytails and tights off in Philadelphia. Bless them, our wonderful founders, for the visions they had for us. But history is made wherever people are, and we all have a responsibility to know that history that was made, so we stop thinking everything is brave and courageous and a first, to know what's already been done so we can do new and better things.
We're talking right now with UW-Milwaukee Professor Emerita Genevieve McBride, and she's with us today to talk stories of history from women here in Wisconsin.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there parts of women's history in the state that you'd like to hear more about, or maybe stories from your own family or your own community about women's lives in the earlier days of Wisconsin? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're talking with UW-Milwaukee Professor Emerita Genevieve McBride. And she's with us today to talk about women's history and tell stories about that here in Wisconsin.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there parts of women's history in the state you want to hear more about? Maybe a story from your family background that might be part of the story of women's history in Wisconsin. Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Go to our first caller now. We've got Sullivan joining us in Green Bay. Sullivan, hi.
Hi. So originally I am from Two Rivers, Wisconsin. And as far as I'm aware, that is where the ice cream sundae was invented, at the Washington House. And unfortunately, I don't really know much about the history of that. So, do you know, happen to know anything about that, Professor Genevieve?
Sullivan, thanks. Is that one you know, Genevieve?
I read that somewhere on the internet or something. I recommend doing a little Googling. I don't think that figured into the women's history in this book, but I have come across that tale. I should go look it up again. It's been a while since I found that, and since I've been through Rivers. My son-in-law is from Manitowoc, so I know the area well, and he's a great ice cream lover. I wouldn't be in the least surprised.
And are there, I mean, this is a big topic, but are there any inventions by women in Wisconsin that we should know about?
I am not having any come to mind right now.
It's a big subject.
Although I would say there's ideas like the Wisconsin idea itself that women played a major part in. A big part of the story, and the story actually the entirety of my first book, was on women in our early politics and the press here. Women like Belcase La Follette, Theodora Winton Yeomans, who was featured on the cover, pioneering women journalists who also were early women suffragists, and you find out that women were very much a part of politics and of education here before they got the vote, because by being part of it, they were able to win the vote. They figured out how politics she is done, and she is so done often done through the media. so they worked in that. Talking about family stories, I was a woman journalist in Wisconsin before I went on for my PhD at your campus and came back to my campus to teach. And I'm the daughter of a woman journalist in Wisconsin from the 1940s on. And I was taught that my mother was a pioneer woman journalist, and it was rather astonishing to keep going back through our past and find out that every generation was told they were the pioneers in journalism, medicine, law, and everything, because they were taught the alternative facts, as we would say today, of Wisconsin history rather than the actual facts, which is that women have been involved in all of those fields as well as in politics from the very start.
And Genevieve, you mentioned the Wisconsin idea, which is something, the idea with the board, is it the borders of the university or the borders of the state? And that has gone on. It's something that persists today. Can you tell us just briefly, if you would, a little bit of that story?
Well, it is, of course, credited to some wonderful minds. Actually, a colleague of mine, Professor John David Hovler, is the expert on the Wisconsin idea, and I think has talked about it recently in your city as well as mine with a new publication. And, of course, he looks at the marvelous work of John Bascom and Bob La Follette and others involved in that marvelous era of education and more in Madison. But David and I have talked, and I was appreciative that he appreciated some of my research that showed very strong influences and the partnerships that led to so many great things about our state actually were the wonderful Emma Curtis Bascom and Belle Case La Follette. As a matter of fact, a little more than a century ago, when Bob La Follette became governor of Wisconsin, he referred to that period of our history as when we were governor, speaking about his marvelous wife, Belle Case from Baraboo. And we find out more about them. I looked at that 1906 famous inaugural speech, which is known for laying out the progressive agenda, which encompassed the Wisconsin idea and more, in this state. And it sounded familiar to me, and I went back through my notes, and I found that actually we know that Belle Case La Follette wrote her husband's speeches, that she clearly had written that one because it was 10 years old by that point. It basically was the same speech she had given in 1896 at the inaugural meeting of the Wisconsin Federation of Women's Clubs, which she helped to found. So it was actually, she laid out the progressive agenda for club women in this state at the end of the previous century.
What a story, and we have to leave it there. Genevieve, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Genevieve McBride, Professor Emeritus of History at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She's with us today. She's sharing stories of women's role in the history of Wisconsin.
Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's executive producer Erica Janik.
Irish dance is booming in Milwaukee. The dancers typically keep their arms straight at their sides while their legs quickly leap, kick, and shuffle across the floor. Maureen McCollum went to investigate.
Oh, a fesh? No one knows what a fesh is. A fesh is an Irish dance competition. It is craziness, but it's a competition where kids get to come and dance. We have 930 competitors. They come, they do two steps of a dance on stage. We have reels, we have jigs, we have slip jigs, hornpipes, treble jigs, sets. I'm Maura Kathleen Heck, and I'm an Irish dance teacher and owner of Cashel Dunhe School of Irish Dance in Milwaukee.
It's just really fun. You get to fly, which is awesome, and I don't know, it just takes everything else that you're stressed about away, and you just get to focus on dance.
My name's Siobhan McPhail. I'm 14. I dance with Kinsella Academy of Irish Dance, and I live in Milwaukee. I think it's definitely a sport because you need to have stamina and strength and flexibility and anything that any other athlete needs.
I'm Mariana Pop George. I'm 13 years old, and I dance for the Trinity Academy, Mequon, Wisconsin, or Milwaukee. I competed in the under-14 Open Championship category, and I just finished my treble jig. This dress, it's baby blue.
It's a lot of white. It has a lot of accents on it that's like a Celtic design. And it's kind of like a tennis skirt style. And then my mom added some blue crystals along the sketching of the skirt and then to the bodice.
The dresses many years ago used to be more authentic, and they would actually had Irish designs on them from this book called The Book of Kells. They've evolved into more geometric shapes and bling, as everyone calls it. And the hair, I can't. There's folklore about, you know, oh, back in the days of ancient Ireland, like, they all curled their hair and it, so it bounced nicely as they, you know, were dancing down the aisles and dancing at the crossroads. When I was younger, we actually had to put the little pink curlers in our hair and sleep on them overnight, and your head against a window if you're driving to a fesh in Ohio. Oh, it was so painful. And then it took, you know, an hour to uncurl them in the morning. Now they're wigs and they take 5 minutes.
I like to put the wig on the Americans. My name is Sean Beglin, and I am the owner and director of Beglin Academy of Irish Dance. Before I finished high school, I was with Riverdance part-time, which still is a big Irish dance show. I left high school and got a call 2 days later that Riverdance wanted me full-time, and my first city was Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Riverside Theatre. We're very lucky to be in Wisconsin. What is great about this city is that in Milwaukee we have Irish dance plus Irish music plus Irish singing plus Irish language. That we have Celtic studies. There is such a bloodline of Irish running through this area of America that you can't get away from it.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
Coming up, the Congressional Budget Office's report about the costs associated with a new GOP health care plan includes the impact of eliminating federal funding for Planned Parenthood. We'll find out what they found coming up here on Central Time.